ID, the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
What does it take to stay alive? Hello, I'm your host, Eric Anderson, and today we'll listen to the second half of my recent conversation with Dr. Howard Glicksman about the remarkable systems in the human body that help control water and sodium and keep us alive. Dr. Glicksman practices palliative medicine and is co-author of the recent book, Your Designed Body. We previously discussed sodium pumps in your cells and blood pressure sensors in your brain, as well as blood flow detectors in the kidneys that help control renin and aldosterone. We now rejoin the conversation as Dr. Glicksman takes us through additional systems that have to work just right to keep you going. All right, what else do we need to consider? You've mentioned two mechanisms. Is there anything else?
Well, a third mechanism is in both of these systems, in the first two systems, which is arterial, and the second one is arteriolar, right? Both of them are affected by the vascular resistance and also the cardiac output. So if you think about it, this is just beautiful, is, well, where can you find in the body where the pressure, the chamber or the vessel pressure or stretch would be totally just due to the sodium in the water itself? And this would be basically in a low pressure system, where in the venous system, where the cardiac output and the downstream vascular resistance is not effective, it's not working. And lo and behold, in the atria, right, atria of the heart, you have a sensor there that puts out is in response to that stretch, it puts out a hormone called atrial natriuretic protein. So the word natriuretic, people may be familiar with the term diuretic. Diuretic is when you try to release water. A natriuretic hormone or natriuretic protein is going to make the body release sodium.
Okay.
So just to give you an idea, you know, the mean pressure at the level of the heart, when it comes out, the blood comes out of the aorta, is about 100 millimeters of mercury. By the time it gets down to the arterial, it's about 30, 35. By the time it gets through the capillary, it's about 20 millimeters of mercury. By the time it gets back to the atria, the right atria, it's about 5 millimeters of mercury. So this is a very low pressure system, but very sensitive to how much water and sodium is in the body. And so if you have too much water in the body, if that increases, then it actually sends out this what's called ANP, atrial natriuretic protein, and it does the reverse of the other two systems, okay? It tells the kidneys to release sodium, which is the opposite of aldosterone. It inhibits the release of renin, right, which makes angiotensin II. It inhibits the effects of norepinephrine. So this is like what Steve would call the push-pull syndrome. Right, you've got the sympathetic nervous system, the renin angiotensin system, making sure the body holds on to salt and water if the pressure goes too low. But if there's too much, or if the fluid is too low, if sodium and water is too low in the body, if it's at the other end, you've got another system in place to block what they do. So these are always balancing back and forth. They're always going on at the same time. And it even ultimately decreases the desire for water and salt. So it's the exact opposite of the other two systems.
Right, which is critical. I mean, you can die, as we know, unfortunately, you can die from too much water intake.
That's right, so, and too much sodium. And right,
yeah, true? Yeah, okay. All right, any other mechanisms that are at work here that we ought to mention?
One other thing to consider is then, okay, so the three systems we've talked about control sodium and water. What about water on its own? I mean, we're talking about one-third of the water in the body is in the extracellular fluid, but two-thirds is in your cells, okay? So you can be in a situation where you're dehydrated. Technically, dehydration means that your cells have actually shrunk and you're reduced in water, not necessarily sodium, but you're actually low in water.
Okay.
And so what you've got to get out of the extracellular fluid and look at the intercellular fluid. That's how the body figures out how much water it has, because what happens is that the total chemical content in the water inside your cell and outside the cell is always the same. And as soon as there's a change, water will go back and forth by osmosis. So if you've lost water, if let's say you're working outside, your wife was doing that run, what was it called, the mudders? Yeah. And she's getting dehydrated. Well, her cells are going to shrink a little bit because the water from the cell is going to move into the extracellular fluid, into the intravascular volume to try to prop up her blood pressure while she's doing this. This is why you're able to compensate for a while. The cells will shrink. And lo and behold, you have a receptor. You have a sensor called the osmoreceptors inside your hypothalamus that detect the shrinkage. In fact, they respond to just 1% change in size of the cell, which would be all you have to do is lose about a half a liter of water from your body. And that affects how much a hormone called antidiuretic hormone is sent out. So it sends a message to the posterior pituitary gland that sends out a hormone called antidiuretic hormone. So as antidiuretic means, it makes the kidney hold on to water. And so that's how the body controls the water specifically. It goes to the kidney to one area and says, hold on to as much water. So this explains why in your wife's situation, she's working out there, she's sweating, she's losing water. Later on, when she goes to urinate, she's going to have a small amount of very concentrated urine because the body sent out antidiuretic hormone. It went to the kidneys and said, hold on to as much water as you can from the urine you're making. But then if she drinks a lot of water later, then the cells plump up again. The hypothalamus reduces its message, so less antidiuretic hormone comes out, and suddenly that reduces the effect on the kidneys, and now you're urinating a whole bunch of very dilute water. So that's right. How your body controls water. So you got all these four systems. You got the sympathetic nervous system, you got renin and angiotensin aldosterone system, you got the atrial natriuretic protein system, and you've got the antidiuretic system. They're all working together to help your body control its sodium and water. And of course, all of these are affecting, I left out the ADH or antidiuretic hormone. It also sends a message to tell you to drink as well. So the thirst center and the salt center are always being controlled by all of these hormones at the same time.
Well, it's really remarkable. And you know, we could spend, I'm sure, an hour, probably actually a semester course on each one of these systems. But it's really remarkable that we have all of these systems in place to just help us, you know, A, make sure that we get the oxygen and the nutrients that we need into the cells for a multicellular organism like ourselves, and then control all of these tendencies that, you know, we would have otherwise from the laws of nature that are trying to kill us.
That's right. I mean, and the laws of nature, we just talked about the laws of nature that are trying to kill us, that, you know, we're talking about, you know, you need temperature control, so you're losing sodium and water, okay? You're breathing, so you're always giving up water as well. You've got the gastrointestinal system, so you need to bring in, you know, sugar and salt, et cetera. So the way that system works, you're losing sodium and water there. And then you've got toxic nitrogen byproducts from protein metabolism. So you need kidney function, but part and parcel of kidney function is you can lose sodium and water there too. So you have to have – all of these have to be controlled, but they're always going up and down and back and forth. And then, of course, you've got control. There's a sensor in your brain that says, oh, you better drink something, you better eat something, mm-hmm. you better take some salt in, and then you got to maintain your blood pressure. So there's all these systems that are all dependent on each other.
And so, this is my desire for potato chips is my desire for potato chips is actually healthy, is what you're saying. I'm trying to take salt in here.
Yeah, that's fine, as long as you don't have heart failure and fluid overload problem.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. As long as I don't eat the whole bag, right?
Usually what I recommend for people who have a problem, if they have a salt problem, I just like, eat whatever you want, but just stay away from anything that's obviously salty, pretzels and potato chips, and don't use the salt shaker, you know.
There you go.
But, you got to make – otherwise, you know, like, don't eat anything. As a doctor, it's very easy for me to make life miserable for everybody.
Yeah, you got to be realistic with your patients, Howard. So bring all this together. Just sort of step back, because we've been in the weeds a little bit. Sort of step back, high level, you know, 10,000 foot here, Howard. Put this all together for us, if you will, just kind of in a paragraph or two.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to say is that the idea of Darwinism, evolution, is very unidimensional. It's this idea that the laws of nature on their own, you know, can bring on life, and you know, this gene turns on this protein, and maybe a gene regulatory network can sort of turn on a few proteins, but it doesn't take into account everything that has to be done. Basically, the laws of nature require the body to have to solve a lot of problems. That's why you have all these different systems going on. We know what the cell needs. The cell itself has its own problems. It needs enough energy, needs enough sodium and water and potassium, etc. But then when you branch out into a multicellular organism, then it becomes crazy. You got to have a cardiovascular system, gastrointestinal system. You have to have skin, thermal regulation, etc. And all of these are affected by the laws of nature. And because of that, you have to have all these control mechanisms and what we would call the Goldilocks principle. They all have to be just right. If you don't have the right blood pressure, the right sodium, the right water, you're dead. Any one of these, not all of them together, anyone. So that's what prompted me to start writing about this years ago. And luckily, Steve Loffman got we were able to put the book together. And this is what we talk about in the book.
Yeah, I'm so glad you did start writing about that. I remember reading your articles years ago and really appreciating the way that you brought the reality, you know, to the forefront here. One of the things that jumps out to me from all of this is just the astonishing engineering challenge of going from a single-celled organism to a large multicellular organism. I mean, it's just on a whole different scale, the kinds of challenges, even though a single-celled organism, as we know, is incredibly sophisticated and complex and difficult to build. But going from that to a multicellular organism is just off the charts engineering capability.
Yeah, and just to also point out what we already mentioned, that you know, you've got all these systems in place, the sensors are in different places. They just happen to be in the right place to do what they need to
there
do,
you go.
Right?
Well, that's fortunate.
And they have different integrators to analyze the data, which sends different messengers, you know, like neural hormones and hormones. And they just send it to the right, you know, to the right places, you know, and they know what to do. And they know how to do it and what to do, how for how long. And you've got this push-pull principle going on all the time. There's always interdependent and balancing back and forth. And it's just amazing. As I said, you know, I'm sorry to say it, but it puts you on your knees when you really understand this stuff.
Yeah. That's true. Hey, before we wrap up, I did want to ask you one thing about kidneys just a little bit. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, what they're filtering, how they're helping to bring back some of the water and the sodium.
Yeah, so your kidneys, they're always filtering. They're filtering the blood. And one of the main jobs they do is they get rid of urea. So the breakdown of protein in the cell forms something called ammonia, but then the ammonia goes in the liver, the liver converts ammonia to urea, and that's one of the main jobs that the kidneys do. But while they're filtering the water out of your blood, they're also taking everything else. They're taking sodium and potassium and sugar, etc. So your kidneys filter about like 7 liters of water per hour. So that's about 180 liters a day. Hmm. And that water, because the sodium, you have so much sodium in the extracellular fluid, that water actually contains about 95% of the sodium in your body. And so the kidneys tend to bring back about 99% of that. So like they filter it, but then downstream, based on these hormones and these messengers, they decide how much they need to bring back. Okay. Depends on what's going on in the body. They also bring back sugar and calcium, et cetera. They control various chemicals in the body.
Yeah. Hang on for a second. This is, I don't know if I'm asking a question that's way out in left field, but it just occurred to me as you were talking here. So you're saying that the kidneys are filtering this fluid and bringing back, what did you say, like 99% of the sodium to be reused again in the body, right?
Yeah. So the kidneys, generally, the way the kidneys are set up with the hormones, et cetera, the kidneys generally bring back about 99% of the water that filters through it. So we just said your kidneys filter 180 liters of water per day, fluid per day. So that's about 1.8 liters. So you make about 1.5 to 2 liters of urine. And then they also bring back about 99.5% of the sodium and about 90% of the potassium. So this is automatic. Okay. And then it gets changed by, you know, it depends on your situation. Aldosterone will affect it. Antidiuretic hormone
right.
will affect it. Atrionatriuretic protein will affect it, you know, and norepinephrine, et cetera. So they're always being, that's what these hormones are doing. They're coming in there and telling the kidneys, based on what's going on at that moment, how much water you need at that moment.
Right, right. But the thing that jumped out at me while you were mentioning this is, if we are actually recycling, if I'm understanding you correctly, somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 90 to 99%, depending on which molecule we're talking about.
Sure.
Let's say sodium, since we've been discussing that today, 99.5% of that is being recycled and reused. The point is, we can't take in enough sodium to stay alive, right? If it were all excreted, once you use some sodium, it's excreted and you're done. You know, you'd be dead in a hurry. So even the amount of salt I'm taking in with all these chips I'm eating every night, Howard, it's not even remotely in the ballpark of enough sodium. If I was only using it once and then excreting it, right, I have to be doing this 99.5% efficient recycling to stay alive. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's right. Like, let's say the kidneys filtered this stuff from your blood, and if it didn't bring back any water at all, you'd be dead in 90 minutes. And if it didn't bring any of that sodium back, you'd be dead in 30 minutes. Okay, so you're right. You can't. It's not only that you have to bring it in, but you also have to conserve it. Exactly. That's what the kidneys do. They're conserving all those sort of things.
And reuse it over and over and over again. Yeah. Interesting.
Exactly.
We always talk about how important water is, and you need, you know, you can only survive so long without water, et cetera. But you're saying that sodium, you'd be dead even quicker.
That's right, because the sodium, it props up the extracellular fluid, which is what the intravascular volume is dependent on. So sodium is just as important as water, probably more important. than water, and the body can handle the water thing a little easier than sodium. But dehydration, probably the commonest problem that we see in clinical practice, though, is dehydration. You know, people losing water.
Yeah.
There's always enough sodium. The sodium level in the blood will go very high, and that's usually the sodium level in the blood is largely dependent on your hydration. It doesn't really tell you about the sodium in the body. It's more related to how much water is in the body. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we should add the kidneys in then, I guess. You know, we have five systems here that are that are helping to control all this. It sounds like it. Probably other stuff too.
Well, one thing I left out was the adrenal gland, because the adrenal gland I think it's controversial, but if I'm not mistaken, the adrenal gland can actually measure the sodium and ratio of sodium and potassium, and based on that,
really?
it's the gland that sends out aldosterone. So the adrenal gland, which I left out of this discussion, actually does send out aldosterone on its own, but it also sends out aldosterone based on messages from norepinephrine and also from the renal angiotensin system. So angiotensin 2 and norepinephrine do stimulate the adrenal gland to send out aldosterone, but the adrenal gland on its own is always monitoring the sodium and potassium level. So it's an interesting thing also that we just said that the cell, right, we talk about the sodium potassium pump. So the sodium potassium pump gets rid of sodium and brings in potassium. Aldosterone does the exact opposite for the body than what the sodium potassium pump does. When aldosterone tells the kidney to hold on to sodium, it releases potassium.
Okay.
Right. So it's interesting. You got the sodium potassium pump and aldosterone. They do the two opposite things. One's at the body level. The other one's at the cellular level. It's just amazing stuff. It's just
yeah. Well, Howard, this is really remarkable. I mean, we've had kind of a deep dive. It feels like a deep dive, but I'm sure we're just scratching the surface on what's involved in keeping us alive moment to moment and day to day. It's really awe-inspiring.
Yeah, you got that right.
Well, thanks so much for being with us today to help us understand what's actually required to build and maintain a living organism like ourselves. One of the things I've noticed over the many years I've reviewed the evolutionary explanations, Howard, is that there's this incredibly simplistic, rather naive, in fact, I would say, view of what's required for living organisms. And it's so helpful and frankly refreshing to hear you dive into what's actually required and the awe-inspiring engineering at work within our own bodies. So thank you very much.
Yes, it's been great to be here. Thanks a lot, Eric. Nice, always great to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ID the Future. To learn more about the remarkable engineering of life, join us again at idthefuture.com or on your favorite podcast app. And please help us reach more people with this important message by sharing a link with a friend. For ID the Future, I'm Eric Anderson. Thanks for listening.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by its Center for Science and Culture.